Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cara, acne can be tough. Whether your kid is just starting to get breakouts or has been struggling with them for years, there's a great product that can help.
Phyla is the ultimate game changer. It tackles acne right at its root cause, rebalancing the skin's bacteria and packing it with probiotic phages.
Phyla harnesses the superpowers of probiotics, tiny warriors targeting and wiping out the acne-causing bacteria. In studies, Phyla slashed acne-causing bacteria by a whopping 90%.
Phyla doesn't just fix acne you can see. It stops new breakouts in their tracks. It has no harsh chemicals and won't irritate or dry most skin. Phyla's three-step system is like a dermatologist-approved magic potion. Cleanse, apply serum, and moisturize twice a day.
As a special treat for our listeners, you can grab 25% off your first order of Phyla. Head over to phylabiotics.com, enter code PUBERTY at checkout, and kickstart your family's journey to acne-free skin. Check out the link in our show notes for quick access.
Welcome to This Is So Awkward, the podcast. I'm Dr. Cara Natterson.
And I'm Vanessa Kroll Bennett. Everyone on Earth goes through puberty, so it shouldn't be cringy.
With science, guidance, and humor, we cover all of the physical, emotional, and social changes that happen between the ages of 8 and 18.
We have tons more on lessawkward.com, where members can get answers to all of their questions all of the time. This stage of life is awkward for everyone involved, but it doesn't have to be.
Okay, buckle up and let's get into today's episode.
Wait, are you in the right place? Yes, you are. The Puberty Podcast is now This Is So Awkward, the podcast. So don't worry, it's the same podcast, just making sure everyone knows that we address all the various issues affecting kids between 8 and 18 and beyond. And today, you are in for a major treat, because when we say beyond, we mean well into adulthood to the point of menopause. You have been asking and asking and asking, and we have the perfect guest to guide us through what some people call reverse puberty, although you'll hear in a second why that's not the case. Dr. Mary Claire Haver is a board-certified obstetrics and gynecology specialist, a certified menopause practitioner from the Menopause Society, and a certified culinary medicine specialist from Tulane. She is a total social media rock star spreading the menopause gospel to the entire world, and she has a new book out called The New Menopause, which is totally phenomenal, clear, interesting, chock full of science, debunking myths, making us rethink how we take care of our bodies and manage having kids in puberty in our homes while we do so. So enjoy the ride. She is as delightful as she is smart, and this episode is a lot of fun.
Mary Claire, we're so excited, like jumping out of our real skins on this virtual interview to have you here. Let's start at the beginning, where you came from academically, what your work history was in the world of OB. I love how you call it OB-GYN. I always call it OB-GYN.
That's a Southern thing, I think.
It's awesome. So I'm going to use it for the purposes of this podcast.
Gynecology.
Exactly. Good old gynecology. So before you got to this stage in your work life, where'd you start? Where'd you come from?
I was teaching residents, med students. I was a program director, as well as running a very busy private practice. So I took care of all the docs, the nurses, the PhDs, the locals, you know, had a great, beautiful relationship with my patients. It's a small town with a big university. So I knew everyone, you know, like I'd go to the Christmas pageant at our kids' little private school and they're all the kids up, you know, the baby Jesus and Mary. I had delivered half of the wise men and the donkey. And, the, you know, I was like counting all the babies that were mine up on the stage. And so, you know, I thought I was going to do that forever. And then administrative burdens started shifting greatly, as we all know, in medical practice. And I was becoming less and less happy, working more and more hours, more and more nights. And I was like, I can't sustain this. And I was going through menopause. Mm-hmm. And so just kind of got to this, me realizing there's a huge gap in my knowledge and education around menopause because I am suffering horribly. And why am I so scared of hormone therapy? And that kind of, you know, plus the weight gain I was going from. So what started out was really like, what the this is not okay. I can't live like this. And why am I gaining all this weight? And why are my patients gaining weight? And everyone's complaining. And maybe we're not just whiny, which is what I was taught mm-hmm. in residency. Maybe we're actually suffering from real biological consequences, you know, biological causes that are giving us significant consequences. And I just realized, you know, there's so much to unpack and undo here. I need to focus on this. And I'd reached a point in my career where I could see myself stepping back from obstetrics, stepping back from surgery so that I could focus on this. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to pay my bills, you know?
And just to put a finer point on it for people who don't understand what it means, when you're a generalist OBGYN, you do everything. You deliver the babies, you do the surgeries, you do everything. You are, right, you are a 360 provider. And so by stepping back, what you really were doing was falling into a very small corner of the world in which you were trained, but that has gotten no funding, no attention, right? So when I left practice, people were, very few people, but some people were frustrated that I was leaving what I was trained to do. And I was like, no, I'm just doing it in a different way. Yeah. And I felt very, like, as I was reading your words and I've listened to other podcasts you've been on, you talk about it, it's the same thing, right? You didn't abandon, you just went down this little rabbit hole that turns out to be massive that no one talks about.
And I literally on a wing and a prayer, can I make this work? Because I really feel like this is where I need to be. Now, granted, financially, my husband's got a great job. We had all our bills paid. Everything was kind of paid off. You know, I was the right position where I could take the risk to leave the guaranteed paycheck and a job that I'd been happy with for a long time, but was killing me because of the hours, you know, to just see if I could make this work. And thank God it happened and allowed me to like develop the social media platform and just educate and then find other providers like me across the US. Those are my sisters. Like, this is the menopause and we are locked arms, bonded, and we are not backing down. You know, we're not going to stop until there's residency training, until there's an educational platform for women after reproduction that encompasses all specialties.
So Mary Claire, it's very clear you are a woman on a mission. We love women on a mission. You are a kindred spirit. Our listeners have been asking us for like basically 3 years to do an episode on menopause. And let's start with a baseline because you two are doctors, but I am not a doctor and most of our listeners are not physicians. So let's start with definitions.
Okay.
Menopause, perimenopause, postmenopause, and just hot take for all of you, the definitions are not going to be all that satisfying because mm-hmm. it's a little funky. So Mary Claire, give us the best definitions that we have.
Clinically, we define menopause, meaning you go to the doctor, you say 10 things, and he's like, that's menopause. You're over 45 and you haven't had a period for a year, the end. Okay, that is menopause. It is one day in your life. It is one day after your last menstrual period. There are so many problems with this definition. What if you've had a hysterectomy? What if you've had an IUD that has progestin? You don't have periods. What if you had an ablation? What if? What if you were born without a uterus? That happens.
Yeah.
You know, how do you define menopause then? So what it represents is ovarian failure. And people hate when I say that word. Ovarian retirement is the kinder way to say. But what your listeners need to realize, and this is where it really makes sense. We are born with all of our eggs, and they have to last us until they don't.
Kids love that information. They flip out when they find out they were born with all their
males. Eggs. You have a Y chromosome, that changes. You make all of your stuff fresh every day from puberty until you die. And so females, no. At 5 months in utero, so when your mom was pregnant with you, 5 months along is when you had the most amount of eggs. And from that moment until your ovary, your last egg kills over, you will have to live with those eggs. So we're born with like 1 to 2 million eggs in the ovaries. They sleep till puberty, but we're still losing them in the background a little bit. Then we start trying to ovulate. Okay. Every month through the ovulation process, we lose about 11,000. And the quality of that egg supply. Remember, we're born with them. They're getting hit with x-rays and toxins and, you know, and just the normal aging process is happening twice as fast as any other organ in your body. So by the time you're 30, you are down to 10% of your egg supply. And by the time you're 40, it's about 3% average. So, you know, there's going to be plus or minus on either side. And menopause represents the end of the eggs. They are exhausted. There are no more. And they will, the factory has shut down. The ovarian factory has shut down. No more estradiol or any of the subestrogens and no more progesterone coming from there. Fortunately for testosterone, we make about half in the adrenal pathway and that one stays intact. So we have a decrease in testosterone, but not, you know, not to the less than 1% that we have with estradiol. And that is menopause.
So that's menopause. Let's talk about perimenopause.
Okay. So we're going to do a little bit of endocrinology and hopefully I can explain this in layman's terms.
Our audience loves endocrinology.
Okay.
They love so, hormone talk.
It's like the anti-puberty. So we have the hypothalamus, which is a gland in our brain, and it secretes something called GnRH, gonadotropin-releasing hormone. And it has a little finger in our blood supply and it's constantly sensing for estrogen. And when it sees good estrogen, it doesn't send any hormones down. It's like, we're good, we're good, we're good. When estrogen levels decline, like in a normal menstrual cycle, right? We have this kind of, we ovulate and then the estrogen levels surge, then they drop again. The brain's like, whoa, where'd my estrogen go? Sends a signal to the pituitary, hey, we need more estrogen. The pituitary says, yes, sir. Starts making LH and FSH, some stimulating hormones that then talk to the ovary and say, let's go, let's go. Okay. When we reach some kind of critical threshold of our egg supply, somewhere 7 to 10 years before that final menstrual period. So average menopause is 51 in the US. Normal is still 45 to 55. So let's back that up 7 to 10 years. Somewhere in the mid to late 30s to early 40s, perimenopause will begin. And basically, that LH and FSH surge is not enough to get you to ovulate on time. So the brain's like, hey, I told you I need more estrogen. The ovaries are trying, but they just can't because the egg quality is much poorer and there aren't as many eggs to recruit. So you get a bigger surge of LH and FSH. Then all of a sudden, the little engine that could, the ovary just, it spits out an egg or two. And all of a sudden, we get a big surge in estrogen, way higher than we ever had in our healthy menstruating years. Okay, the premenopausal years. So what used to be this very kind of EKG looking estrogen surge, LH, FSH, very predictable monthly cycle is now a zone of hormonal chaos until it's exhausted. And they've done multiple studies on perimenopausal women, checking their blood multiple times throughout a 6 month cycle. And literally it looks like this for LH, FSH.
For those of you who can't,
and progesterone.
For those of you not watching on YouTube and you can't see Mary Claire's hands, they're basically moving all over the screen like a series of insane drunk fish in a fishbowl.
So some days in perimenopause, you can have super high estradiol. Some days in perimenopause, you can have extremely low estradiol. It is literally chaotic. And this is why there is not a great blood, urine, or saliva test, one-time test, because it just depends on where you are in the chaos. That is going to be like, clearly she's perimenopausal. If you have a few consistent FSHs above 25, you are most likely late perimenopausal if you're still having periods. So, and that means your period will stop in 1 to 3 years.
Because your pituitary gland is trying to send that louder signal to your ovaries. They're like, you're not listening. And the FSH levels are high. And you called it the anti-puberty, but I'm going to paint a slightly more optimistic picture, which is, we talk a lot on this podcast about the surges and drops, particularly in estrogen and testosterone through puberty, where the highs are higher than they're ever going to be and the lows are lower than they're ever going to be on a regular basis. But it is more rhythmic. And the rhythm goes sort of on more of an hourly cycle, and it's a little more predictable. What you're describing are these peaks and valleys that are both high and low, like we haven't had for decades, and are unpredictable. And that is, right, one of the biggest differences here. Another big difference being the way the brain interprets that and how it impacts the way the brain feels. And we can talk about that. Can we talk for a second about, people wear continuous blood glucose monitors all the time and they measure, right? You got one on right now. And they measure what someone's blood sugar is doing. Talk to me about why, instead of doing these one-off tests that we know are not useful, why aren't people collecting data on hormones like estrogen and LH and FSH in a continuous way in order to measure these
rhythms? That would be the most impactful thing that we could do in perimenopause, is begin to detect the disruptions in the force. My daughter, who's 23, first-year medical student, fully intends to create one of these, if so that no woman has to go through the guessing game of when this is happening to her, and you can intervene ASAP.
Yep.
Because we know that early intervention leads to less chronic disease long-term, plus less symptoms. Just the world is better if you don't have to go through this.
And this is the part of the conversation that we're going to get to in a minute that is critical.
Yeah.
Because the information about replacing hormones or supplementing hormones, I mean, it's been terrible.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. And there's a lot of debunking of real true myth about what the data shows that is upending the health and wellness of women. And we have to fix this information.
Right.
And you are with your, what did you call them? The
menopausy.
your menopausy. That is an amazing term. You and your menopausy are shouting as loudly as you can into a giant wind tunnel. So, I mean, maybe we should just go there now and just do a quick bit of history on why the data is so bad, why the messaging was so backwards.
Before we do that, for people who are not physicians, can you explain why estrogen is so, before we talk about why it's so, the debunking is so important, can you explain to people why estrogen is so protective and important to the body, and then go to this, what was the word I was going to use? That's like perimenopausal brain fog, your crusade on the debunking, because it's so, so important. But just remind people why it's so protective.
Estrogen is a powerful anti-inflammatory hormone. And we have estrogen receptors in every single organ system of our body. And certainly there are times when our estrogen is high, you'll get certain symptoms during this perimenopause chaos. And the whole debunking the misinformation surrounding estrogen dominance, don't even get me started. And then the estrogen deprivation syndrome. And so when we lose estrogen, your risk of cardiovascular disease increases, your risk of insulin resistance increases, your metabolic syndrome risk increases 3 times versus an age-matched premenopausal woman. So if I'm 55 and menopausal, and Sally, or you know, next to me is 55 and hasn't gone through menopause yet, which would be late, but it's possible, I have a 3 times higher chance of independently having metabolic syndrome if we were identical twins, just from being menopausal. That's what I want people to understand. Besides the hot flashes and the sleep disruption, all the things that raises cortisol, I mean, you end up in this horrible negative feedback cycle leading to increased weight gain, visceral fat, you know, inflammation, et cetera. And I'm moving my hands in circles showing this feedback cycle. So stabilizing estrogen, you know, getting it back into a healthy level will decrease your risk of the acceleration of these diseases. You're still at risk because of aging. We can't stop aging. We haven't done that yet, but we can stop the acceleration that's associated with the loss of estrogen through the menopause transition.
So Mary Claire, now talk us through, because the way you dissect the disinformation, as Cara said, the myth busting that you do around the research and studies about hormone replacement therapy, or as you call it, menopause hormonal therapy, right? MHT.
Mm-hmm. MHT.
Share with people, because as a lay person, I grew up thinking, oh, no, you don't do hormone replacement therapy because all of the studies tell us it's so dangerous.
It's funny because I felt the same way. One study It wasn't even the study. It was the misinformation and the misrepresentation of the study destroyed the future of women's health after reproduction for an entire generation.
Yeah.
It took away the accessibility and the conversation if menopause hormone therapy would be appropriate for these patients due to literally the first misinformation viral thing I'd ever heard of in my life. And I fell prey to it. You know, I was terrified. And so now let's layer on how society feels about women. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I can't help it. How medicine treats females versus males. The lack of study, the lack of education, the lack of knowledge. We never even covered perimenopause in my residency. And of menopause training, I think I got 6 hours. Six out of a 4-year curriculum. I can deliver the shit out of a baby. I got that one nailed. I can do a C-section blindfolded with one arm. You know, I can do a pap smear literally one-handed. You know, I can put the thing in my teeth. But, you know, and that's important stuff. But when we look at, if you go to PubMed right now, and you just type in the word menopause, you'll see 94,000 articles throughout time. But if you type in the word pregnancy, you'll have 1.1 million. That's what we're talking about. The brain power, the research, not that these things aren't important. Reproduction is important. Of course it is. Gen oncology, pediatric gynecology, all these things are important. But why does menopause get the tiniest sliver? Why aren't we recognizing how protective our estrogen is, how we live a better health span? We live longer than men, yes. And that's why, you live longer than men. Why do you care? Because 20% of that life is in poor health. Mm. People trade the 6 years for not being in a bed demented or not having to walk on a walker and being frail.
So those are fighting words. You need to back them up with all the stuff that you just talked about the health risks when we lose our estrogen, when our ovaries aren't fit. I like retirement. I prefer ovarian retirement too.
Get their job. I don't want to have babies right now.
They have like Mai Tais on the beach or like a little golf skirt. So it is astounding to me. Again, I am not in menopause. Your book is like so incredible because it explains the way misinformation got spread. And then you break down how good information gets shared and delivered and explained. You name the risks, the health risks to women with ovarian retirement. I want the AARP to have like a whole group for people in ovarian retirement. But talk about like, those are the risks. What does hormonal, and I know, Cara, you have like 4 million excellent questions on this. So maybe you want to go into like a very specific corner of this.
I think, you know, we could spend a half an hour just talking about the data and the Women's Health Initiative and all of it. I think the better way through this conversation is for you to explain what happens when press about a study reports relative risk versus absolute risk.
Right.
Because this is not unique to menopause.
And even for medical professionals, those concepts can be difficult to understand. And I've never understood as well as I do now because of the WHI.
Correct. So go for it.
Okay. So relative risk is a population risk. And basically, it's how we report statistics. There were 160,000 women in this study of the WHI. And when an average age of the study was 62 years old, they were starting women as old as 77 on hormone replacement therapy as part of the study. The endpoint of the study was to see if cardiovascular disease was preventable or not with hormone therapy. We knew from observational studies, most likely it was, but they wanted to make sure it wasn't the healthy patient. Like healthy, wealthy women were tending to go on HRT. And so was this just because of their background?
And just to be really, really concrete about it, heart attack, stroke. Did you have heart attack or stroke risk with or without hormone replacement therapy?
Hormone replacement. Okay. Breast cancer was just like something that happened.
Incidental finding.
Into the study. Yeah. So they started with a much older population than we would typically start a menopausal patient. They only studied Premarin and alone or Premarin plus medroxyprogesterone acetate. So conjugated equine estrogen. So they only used two very specific formulations. They didn't look at estradiol or oral micronized progesterone, which is what we use now. For reason. So it was a very much older formulation, which was the most popular form at the time. That was not unreasonable. Okay. And they have two arms. You have a uterus, you get estrogen, progesterone, or you get placebo. You don't have a uterus, you get estrogen alone or placebo. Here we go. The estrogen, progesterone arm did show overall a very slight increased risk of breast cancer. Relative risk was from, if I get the math, sometimes the math hurts, 4 out of 1,000 women per year to 5 out of 1,000 women per year. Okay. Mm-hmm. So baseline, women just walking around the street, 4 out of 1,000 women per year were getting breast cancer. Okay. At each age. Average. Of course, older is more and, you know, younger was less. But so that risk increase from 4 out of 1,000 to 5 out of 1,000, that's only 1 out of 1,000 increased risk. That is a 25% increased relative risk. The actual risk to a patient was 0.8% per year.
Vanessa, we literally have 3 minutes to eat lunch every day. I am not joking. And the challenge is how to make it delicious and healthy and still fit into that tiny window. Our answer is Factor's ready-to-eat meals. They have been a godsend.
We throw our Factor meals in the microwave. It takes 2 minutes and out comes a gorgeous, fresh, never frozen meal. We both love the tamale vegetarian one. It's delish. There's a ton of options every week. There's 60 add-ons, breakfast, snacks, beverages. I love doing the wellness shots with my kids. They think it's hilarious. And I know they're getting vitamins and minerals in their bodies.
So get meals on your table or at your desk in 2 minutes or less. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning. You can customize with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can press pause or reschedule depending upon your lifestyle.
So to order, go to factormeals.com/puberty50 and use the code puberty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That code is puberty50 at factormeals.com/puberty50 to get 50% off your first box, 20% off your next box. And I am going to go do that right now because I need more Factor meals in my refrigerator. Cara, lately I have been lying awake at night. I'm physically exhausted, but I can't sleep because my mind is so wired with everything going on between work and my family. So I've added Magnesium Breakthrough to my nightly routine, and it actually helps calm my mind. It helps me get better sleep, and I wake up feeling better rested. I'm less cranky. And I'm more patient with my family and with you.
Oh, I've noticed. And it's because unlike other magnesium supplements that might give one or two formulations of magnesium, Magnesium Breakthrough has 7. That's why you're sleeping so well and waking up refreshed. Now, dietary supplementation is always best, Vanessa. So that means eating your minerals and vitamins is the best way to get them in. But if you can't or you don't get enough, Magnesium Breakthrough is the way to go. It can also help digestion, though too much helps your digestion too much, which is not a good thing. It can support muscle recovery. So bye-bye, Charlie horses. And it helps build dense bones, which is especially important for women approaching and in menopause.
We have an exclusive offer for our listeners. You can go to buyoptimizers.com/puberty, buyoptimizers.com/puberty. And you can use the code puberty10 during checkout to save 10%. That promo code is puberty10 at buyoptimizers.com/puberty. Your body and brain and family and business partner will thank you.
Cara, my kids love Magic Spoon cereal, and even though it's cereal, they actually love it as a homework snack. The variety pack has 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter, and fruity is the favorite flavor in my house.
Now, this pack has 0 grams of sugar, between 13 and 14 grams of protein, and between 4 and 5 grams of net carbs per serving. It's made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and it's high in protein, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So a great choice, Vanessa.
You can go to magicspoon.com/puberty to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our, you guessed it, promo code puberty at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident you're going to love their product. It's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they will refund your money. No questions asked. They do not want you to send their cereal back to them.
Try a bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/puberty and use the code puberty to save $5. Okay, so let me just say it again, because I think it's really important to hear this. So if I went on hormone replacement therapy 25 years ago, which used different hormones, my increased risk of breast cancer was 0.08%. That was the risk I was taking of increasing my odds of getting breast cancer. But because...
Per year.
But because the numbers went from 4 in 1,000 to 5 in 1,000, the way the media reported it, even before the study was published.
Was not published. No one could read it.
No one could read it. And the media reported a 25% increase because going from 4 in 1,000 to 5 in 1,000, when you do the relative risk math, is a 25% relative risk increase. If we made any medical decisions, whether it's pediatrics, OBGYN, or any other specialty based only upon relative risk and not upon absolute risk, we would be treating our patients so differently. And yet, with this one corner, this is how people working inside of medicine and people who are lay people who had no knowledge of medicine, this is the data they were using. These are the numbers they were using. And they stopped using the medicine. 80%. This is the stunning figure of your book, 80% stopped so what? Within weeks.
Number one news story, medical news story of 2002. And the headline screamed, estrogen causes breast cancer.
And they stopped the study.
They stopped the first arm. They kept the estrogen only arm going a few more years. And then the stroke risk was increased probably because the patients were older and were probably prone to stroke. So this data has been rescinded, walked back, rehashed. We do have good information that came from it, and a lot of safety data now is from it. But that mantra remained pervasive in my own practice. I was a terrible menopause provider for probably 18 years. Horrible.
I told my mother to stop taking it. We were all the same, right?
Nancy Snyderman on, you know, ABC or whatever the hell she was on. And, oh, all women should stop. Throw it in the trash.
Yes.
You know, I'm like, okay.
Flush it down the toilet. That's a whole other issue.
You were not intentionally a horrible provider.
But I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I patted people on the knee and oh, honey, you'll get over it. And, you know, I'll give you hormones, but I might kill you. Yeah. Came out of my mouth.
Okay. So now I want to leapfrog to, because I think we can all imagine, and those of us who have had symptomatic menopause can appreciate that the patting on the head does not really help with the insane brain fog, hot flashes. And the list that you write is endless. It's like, it's thank God it's alphabetical, because at least I knew like, oh, we're getting towards the end of the list because it was so long.
Okay. But,
right. I want to jump ahead to why is it okay? And actually more than okay, why is it probably important for people today to be on hormone replacement, or for some people today to be on hormone replacement? And you said yourself, what we're using today is a different formulation. The natural question is, then how do we know it's safe?
So, well, fortunately, there's been lots of studies. The NERSA study, Framingham, God, there's a Dutch study. There's so many. They just didn't get the press. People are still terrified of it. But there is beautiful data looking at estradiol, which is what our ovaries used to make. They have a new word instead of bioidentical, which is a marketing term. They're calling it, I'll have to look it up. The article just came out in the Green Journal. Like finally, the major journal of the OBGYN, ACOG, you know, published this thing about modern hormone therapy. And I was like, oh, I read it this morning. But estradiol is what is chemically identical to what our ovaries made, and progesterone, which is chemically identical to what our bodies made. And those two seem to have by far, especially transdermal estradiol, the best safety profile. And they can find no increased risk over placebo, at least in early, you know, in early menopause for breast cancer, even stroke. So,
and this is really significant because if you're in the earliest stages of menopause, sometimes the rational thinker will say, I'm just going to try to grin and bear it as long as I can.
With labor.
Right? 100%. Right. I did not do that, by the way. There is actually data that shows that grinning and bearing it early may actually work against you.
So where the most exciting data is coming are on the protective benefits of starting hormone therapy, at least within the first 10 years or 5 years. So we know that your risk of dementia, and if you have ApoE4, then your risk of Alzheimer's, if you start early within the first 5 years of stopping your period, it is protective. If you start within 10 years, there is a cardiovascular protection benefit to decrease your risk of cardiovascular disease by as much as 40% per year. And death from cardiovascular disease. And also all-cause mortality decreases. But we have a window of opportunity here. It doesn't mean that estrogen can't help with your bones and will always help your bones. It will always help your general urinary system. But the biggest neuroprotective and cardioprotective benefits are going to be starting in peri or very early menopause and continuing that as long as it's healthy.
There are a lot of people who ask, is being on the pill, right? So taking hormones orally or being on any sort of hormonal contraception, because you don't have to take them orally, is that going to end up being more protective over the long run because you are not experiencing those dips? Is there any early data about this?
I was treated for my polycystic ovarian syndrome with Yaz, the big one, the heavier dose, till 48. And then I came off to kind of see where I was at. And then I was menopausal, fully menopausal. So somewhere in the background, I went through menopause and had very few symptoms. Okay. It wasn't estradiol and progesterone. It was a synthetic estrogen and a synthetic progestin, which I did well with. Like, it controlled my symptoms. I wasn't thinking menopause. But now I'm really looking at, are these other formulations going to be better when I'm treating my menopausal, you know, my perimenopausal patients? Because it depends. We don't know, but looking at the data of MHT doses and protection, it does appear that estradiol, not ethinyl estradiol, but estradiol and progesterone is the best way to go. And so how do I transmit that back? We haven't looked at that data yet. For these women, we don't have a lot of birth control pill options that are not ethinyl estradiol.
So let me ask you a question. If you're on the pill or you have an IUD where you're not really getting a period, so it's harder to judge if you are in perimenopause, do you recommend to people to stop being on those hormonal birth control?
To do a check. Yeah. So I would have her come off for a month and use backup contraception and then check her blood levels to see if she's fully menopausal. Has an IUD, we can check. You know, there's a green scale, the green scoring system, which was developed in 2008, which can tell you if it's most likely perimenopause. And it's just a series of a symptom score. Now, we may be masking that with her birth control pill. Mm. And so we don't know. We haven't looked at that data yet to see, is the birth control pill going to be equivalent for protection? Certainly her symptoms are great. But is it as cardiovascularly protective or not as if we would have switched to an estradiol progesterone combination in the higher doses to suppress ovulation?
So we're actually going to shift gears in the conversation, the relationship between menopausal human beings and pubertal human beings. So for those of you who have many more questions about Mary Claire's recommendations, about understanding the hormones better, about the history of hormonal therapy, all of that, buy the book, read the book. It is explained in exquisite and comprehensive detail. You talked about hormonal chaos within a human being in menopause. Let's talk about the hormonal chaos of a household with people in puberty and adults in menopause.
Okay, can we start here?
Excited.
First of all, it's like the biggest celebrity sighting. Okay. Can we start with an explanation of what happens in the brain with all of this hormonal chaos? You know, we talk about it a lot on this podcast in a partially mature brain. Can you, through the lens of menopausal expert, talk about what it feels like and what happens neurologically as a result of all of these surges and drops?
So we all have a degree of what we call brain fog or cognitive changes. So we look at how the brain processes information and our speed at which we can process the intelligent things. Okay. That's kind of one part of the equation that gets completely rewired And so if you read The Menopause Brain by Lisa Moscone, she just released, she's fantastic, or The Double X Brain. She talks a lot about, you know, the PET scans she's done through the menopause transition and how much the brain changes and our ability to have cognitive. So imagine what my patients describe to me is a loss of like resilience, a loss of executive functioning. And so now also on the other side of the equation is what's happening to our mental health. Our neurotransmitters are greatly affected by the loss of estrogen and progesterone, both serotonin and dopamine. And so we see, you know, there's just have a study come out of Australia. It was always quoted as a 1 in 4 increased risk of major depressive disorder through the transition. That's probably 1 in 8. And, you know, it was 1 in 8. Now they're saying 1 in 4, sorry. And so probably double.
I was
double
like, wait, it's gotten better. That can't
No, it's much worse. It's double. So my bad, my brain.
Good. It's even worse than we all thought. Terrific. Okay.
So not only are we not able to kind of process this quickly in this transition state, it does get better. That cognition part does get better over time. It may take a minute. You'll never be what you were at 35, but it does tend to get better unless you're on the pathway to dementia. Then emotional. So again, a complete change in your resilience, your ability to process the things that life is throwing at you. So now you have this precious pumpkin who is now going through their puberty and all their hormonal changes. And I just speak from personal experience. I was menopausal with two teenage daughters. And my oldest has like now hindsight's 2020, really looked back and was like, Mom, that was hell. You know? I didn't know if I'd ever get her back as a human. Like I fed her and got her everything she needed. She's a straight A student, like precious, but we didn't have a relationship, you know?
I just want to pause there. Okay. So for those of you listening who are in the shit with your kid and in the shit with your own body, your own mental health, your own menopause, you are listening to an expert whose work is entirely dedicated to this very topic, who had her own challenges. I mean, you hear Cara and I talk about our own challenges, my fails, over and over with my own kids. So if you are feeling hopeless, if you are feeling like you blew it, if you are feeling disconnected from your kid, do not lose hope. Because Mary Claire, this was not a it's all over situation.
No, right? I got myself together. I got therapy. A lot was going on at the time. My brother had died. My dad was sick. My other brother got cancer. You know, finally I put on my own oxygen mask, got some hormone therapy, got my nutrition in line, like put myself first. Finally knew that she was going to be okay. Tried to be there, you know, just support her in whatever she needed. But now I'm finally cool again. You know, like she likes me. We have a lot in common. She's in medical school, you know, like I feel like I got her back. My baby just wants me to buy her like cute jeans and, you know,
join the club.
And it's the best. Okay. Can I ask a very specific question, which is one of the hallmarks of that menopausal transition is loss of sleep. And there are a lot of elements to it, right? So some of us on this podcast may have lost sleep due to insane sweats, the likes of which, I mean, no one prepared me for the degree of night sweats that wake you up from sleep. You can't sleep. Some have insomnia where they can't fall asleep, or they fall asleep. And then there's this, I have a huge group of friends who all the emails come in between 2 and 4 a.m. because they're just up. Right. They are just wide awake up. How much does loss of sleep in and of itself impact the parental relationship with pubescent kids? Sort of independent, I mean, it's caused by menopause, but it's the sleep deprivation. Can we tease those things apart? And is that an argument, please say yes, because it's the argument I used, to go on hormones to get some relief and to actually get some continuous sleep?
When you're not sleeping, you can't do anything. Like when the patients come to me, that is the first thing we tackle. And usually they're savvy enough. They've done the sleep hygiene. They know all the things, right? You know, they've turned off the blue light. They're doing all the things to set themselves up for good sleep, and it's still not happening. And certainly if it's hot flushes waking them up, they're ready. They're like, yes, you know, so they know, especially if they follow me. I don't have to convince anyone to go on HRT because they follow me on social media. So, but you know, for a regular doctor, if they're not being woken up by the hot flushes and it's just those like 3 a.m. wake up calls, progesterone can be really powerful. for these patients. You know, it's the progesterone is a really, really helps with the nighttime racing thoughts. It really helps to calm. Like it's night and day still for me if I forget my progesterone before bed, as far as the quality of my sleep. And I wear the sleep tracker. It's charging right now, but yeah.
What about, good thing you're not asleep while recording this podcast.
Alcohol. I can't tolerate alcohol.
Well, let's talk about red wine, and let's talk about also separate thread, the parents out there who are really trying to get on top of these symptoms, and they have either a genetic reason that they cannot take hormonal replacement therapy, or they're cancer survivors and they can't. So
right. Life, a minute on red wine. Luck has taken that ability away. They just don't want it. You know, have to double down on all the other pillars of health, nutrition, exercise, stress reduction, maximizing your sleep, you know, all of that. Now, symptom by symptom, there are things you can do. There's supplements that may help a little here and there. There's no cure for menopause yet. You know, I'm hoping the next generation, menopause will be optional due to some new studies and things coming out with drugs to extend the shelf life of the ovary or whatever. But, you know, it's too late for me and you. Ovaries have set sail and they're not coming back. So I can't regenerate my eggs. And so, you know, you go symptom by symptom. So if it's hot flushes, we start exploring, you know, the neurokinin uptake inhibitors, like the Veozah and the older medications like clonidine or Neurontin for hot flashes can be really helpful. It really, you know, musculoskeletal pain, if they're having headache, you know, we just have to address it symptom by symptom, but like nothing works better than replacing your estrogen.
So Mary Claire, when we're dealing with kids at home who are struggling with their own issues around sleep, or, you know, one thing we haven't talked about is redistribution of weight, particularly around the belly and menopausal women, right? And we're aware of kids and changing bodies who may be gaining weight and changing shape. How do we message to the kids in our house why it's important that we're doing certain things that may not be appropriate for their changing bodies or their lifestyle or their sleep hygiene? Like, how do we talk about that with kids?
You can talk about, like, again, the core pillars of health. And, you know, I grew up in the generation of thin was healthy and you do whatever you could to be thin, which meant excessive exercise and caloric restriction. Very different conversations that I have with my kids about having a stronger body, not a smaller body. You know, that mom has really got to pay attention to her fiber. My kids are now obsessed with fiber. It's not a bad, you know, most of the things that you want to adopt, making sure you're getting enough vitamin D, checking your magnesium levels, or something that everyone can do and aren't going to be harmful. But again, there's always a balance between the negative self-talk. Why are we doing this? You know, and starting the conversation as old as is reasonable about the body changes that do happen with menopause that lead to poor health. And here's the things that we're going to start adopt, you know, mom and dad, hopefully, are going to start doing to try to decrease these risks moving forward. Things you probably don't have to worry about this age, you know, but my kids tell me I was an almond mom for a long time. So back
in my
premenopausal cardio days, like
when I was doing research for this podcast, I listened to a bunch of other podcasts that you've done, Mary Claire, and you made a comment on one of them, and I apologize because I can't remember which one, but it was such a phenomenal comment about how instead of being sort of diet obsessed for the body that you have today, you should be addressing the body you have today in preparation for the body that it will be 20 years from now. Can you talk about that a little? And let's put it in the lens of this conversation about kids and their transforming bodies.
So it's all part of the mindset of moving your body and picking your nutrition so you can be strong. And an easy conversation, at least for my oldest to remember, is my grandmother being demented in a bed for 5 years. My little baby, you know, Maddie does not remember my grandmother like as a person walking around and talking. She just remembers this old lady in a bed who could just mumble and was completely demented. And then, of course, frail. And their grandmother, they're watching her now going through her dementia. Now there's multiple reasons for that, nutrition and whatever, but she's been on a walker for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's an easier conversation for me as like, I'm adopting these habits now. They see me lifting weights like a crazy person, you know, because I don't want to be on a walker with your grandkids. You know, how hard it was. And their grandfather, my husband's father, on a walker, you know, has had multiple orthopedic issues. So like, you know, we're trying to do things now that are going to let us live healthier because we want to play with you. You know, we want to have fun and go on vacations and do things and y'all not to worry about us.
And this is hard with a kid whose prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. It is a hard rationale to say to a 12 or 14 or 16 year old, I want you to flash forward 20 years and think about the body of the future. And yet it's actually a really important conversation, right? Because it's about strength and bone density.
So one of the things, because I have three boys and one girl, and they're all super into being strong and physical and, you know, the weightlifting and all that stuff. And one of the things I've done is actually created like a way for us to mutually encourage each other in the gym, because I just, having watched you and followed you, I've started doing heavier and heavier weightlifting because those tiny little 3 pound Peloton weights are not going to, you know, not going to do anything.
Out of nursing home.
No. So
it's better than nothing, but
but one of the things I've done is I've explained why it's important. And I'm like, hey, do you want me to look X, Y, or Z? Or do you want me to be able to, as you said, go out and do stuff and be super active, but also to do it, Car, to your point, like in their terms, like, hey, I went to the gym today. This is what I benched. This is what I'm now, these are the bicep curls I'm now doing. So for those of you who are feeling embarrassed that like your kids can bench more than you or are like smarter at the gym or more confident with all this equipment, learn from them. Like let them be, I mean, let Mary Claire really be your guide, but like say to your kids, hey, I'm trying this out. I'm nervous. This is hard for me. I haven't done this before. Teach me, you know, give me some encouragement.
But what I'm not hearing is I don't like my body. I'm fat. I'm this, I'm that. All the defeatist language that we were raised on.
That's right.
I'm not hearing any of that.
You're or I got to get smaller or leaner. Like I'm like, I got to get stronger. Like literally, and I've explained to them about losing muscle mass and losing bone density. And they're like, oh, because they're on the uphill climb, like they're going in the other direction. And God, I'm so jealous of that.
So the biggest defining moment for me in this whole journey, like where I started the one, like was I had all the negatives. So I had gained some weight with menopause and I couldn't get it off. I gained through the grieving of my brother. I had a completely logical reason to gain weight because I was eating everything and not moving. And then I was like, okay, the grief had lifted. Let's get back in shape. And I went back to the old habits I did in my 30s and, you know, early 40s of workout more, eat less. And they stopped working. And I was pushing harder and harder and harder. And it was my husband who said, and I had said something, he was going on a 2-week trip. And I said, when you get back, I'm going to lose 5 pounds, whatever. You'll have the wife you deserve. He's like, listen, I love you. I have the wife I deserve. Your daughters are watching. And he said, they hear you, they hear what you're saying, and they're watching the way you're eating. And he goes, this is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And that was the like, oh my God, what am I doing? And he said, you're smart, figure this out. Like, you know, what do you tell the girls when you can't repeat the same behavior if you want a different outcome? And I was like, okay. And hence began the rabbit hole of nutrition and inflammation and menopause and, blah, 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 and all the things which led to all of this.
Which was really putting on your oxygen mask. I mean, it really boils down to that, right? It really boils down to self-care, educated, informed self-care,
right,
which is hard when you have maybe doctors you love who don't know any of this, right? So do you have any suggestions for people who are trying their best and they don't want to make it up on their own and their medical journey is, everyone's medical journey is different. Everyone's health is different. You're very careful to give lots of information without being prescriptive for individuals, which I really deeply appreciate because I think that's very dangerous. Do you have advice for parents who are trying to put their oxygen mask on first? Like, what does that look like? How can you approach your healthcare provider and let them help you?
So you can't expect to walk into any OB/GYN's office. I'm sorry. And with the way we train our medical, you know, professionals today in women's healthcare, outside of reproduction, it's scant at best, you know, unless you need surgery. They just kind of wait for things to break and then they try to fix them. So for someone who's going to help you be proactive about your health in menopause, it can be a little bit tough. So go to the Menopause Society, menopause.org. They have a list of certified providers. Make sure the certified check is checked. That means they took the test and passed it. You can go to our website at thepauselife.com and we have testimonials. I can't, you know, we just guarantee they're in practice. You can read the testimonials. We organize them by state and city, and maybe one of those will work for you. There's some great telemedicine options actually for menopause care. They don't pay me to say any of this. I've vetted three of them. I've vetted several, and there's three that I like. Let me just say that. I've reviewed their protocols. I think they're reasonable. MIDI Health, M-I-D-I Health, takes insurance. And then Alloy and Evernow don't, but they're very, very reasonable. And these were set up and developed by females who were menopausal, who saw the need, who saw the gaps in care, and said, let's make a company around this. And I just think it's fabulous.
And just to be super clear, it's not an upsell of hormones. These are companies that have healthcare providers
trained,
licensed in your state. I mean, there are a lot of rules here too. Mm-hmm. And they are, you know, if your friend gets one piece of information, you may go on and get a slightly different one because your medical history is different, because what's going on for you right now is different. It's telehealth, meaning it is a virtual doctor or healthcare provider interaction, which is a very important thing in this moment, because these hormones that we're losing or that are all over the map, or that sometimes we're taking and supplementing, they are associated with interacting with other systems in our body, right? So there's so much focus on cardiovascular health, stroke and heart attack in particular, because when I was training in medical school and residency, right, what did we have to teach every teenager? We had to teach every teenager you can't smoke when you're on the pill because you have an increased risk of blood clot, right? And you can have a stroke from that. And these are real phenomena. So none of this is said lightly. And in fact, that's the beauty of what you do, is none of this is said lightly. It is said with the utmost seriousness and the utmost respect for the data and the information. Let's land the plane here. Do you have any last advice for, not on the self-care side, but on the parenting or the adulting side? When you're catching yourself, we're really good about advising parents what to do to help a kid who's catching themselves in a bad moment. Mm-hmm. How about when you're catching yourself in a bad moment? How about when you know that it's the hormones that are doing this? It was the horrible sleep last night or for the last month. It's right. You intellectually understand what's going on, and yet here you are. Do you have any advice for those adults?
You know, take a deep breath. You have options. You don't have to suffer. Menopause is inevitable. If we're lucky enough to live long enough, no one gets through this without significant changes in how they process information and how they react to different stresses. But you don't have to suffer. There are pharmacologic things, there are nutritional things, there are lots of things. But when you feel that red flag going up, you need to start changing what you're doing, because those habits that allowed you to maintain homeostasis are not going to work as well anymore. You got to make the changes.
So don't lose hope. For all of you listening, Mary Claire is here to the rescue. Thank you for spending so much time with us. We're so happy that your book is out in the world. If you don't follow her on Instagram, she's totally fantastic and hilarious. And I don't know when you sleep, because you are like the Energizer. If Kara was the Energizer Bunny, you're like the Energizer Bunny on speed. It's like unbelievable. Thank you for being here, for giving so much great information to people out in the world. And we know people will be really reassured by everything you've shared with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. You can email us with questions, feedback, or episode requests at podcast@lessawkward.com.
If you want to learn more about what we do to make this whole stage of life less awkward for everyone involved, our parent membership, our school health ed curriculum, our keynote talks, and more are all at lessawkward.com.
And if you want products that make puberty so much more comfortable, visit myoomla.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.